This is Bill Powers with MiningStockEducation.com, and I'm joined by returning guest, fund manager Dave Kranzler of Investment Research Dynamics. Dave's also the editor of the Mining Stock Journal and the Short Sellers Journal. I asked Dave to come on the program and share his thoughts regarding Novo Resources, the upcoming tax loss selling season, and where he sees the best opportunities in the next 6 months within the junior resource sector. So Dave, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Bill, how you doing? Thanks for having me back on. The pleasure's all mine.
I'm doing very good, and let's start with discussing Novo Resources, which has been the gold exploration story of the year. Its market cap has reached over $1 billion. It went from 50 cents to over $7 a share, U.S. dollars, within the last 6 months. Today, as we speak, it's trading around $5.50 a share. For those that may not know, Novo Resources is a gold explorer and developer in Western Australia, and based on trenching and ground samples that they've done, which has found gold at surface along with their very ambitious geological theory, the market has gotten excited over the potential that the company may have discovered a gold deposit on the magnitude of the Witwatersrand Basin in South Africa. The Witwatersrand Basin has produced over 1.5 billion ounces of gold in its history, and that represents 50% of all gold ever mined on Earth. The market in gold exploration usually gets excited over about a 2 million ounce discovery, but I've heard estimates as high is 20 billion ounces, potentially over 100,000 square kilometers. And that estimate came from John Kaiser, who's an analyst and a newsletter writer. He recently said that at the November Metals Investment Forum. That's quite the possibility. So Dave, with this, you know, high market capitalization and the potential that's being talked about with Novo Resources, what are your thoughts, and would you recommend a buy, or should investors stay on the sideline with this stock right now?
Wait, what did John Kaiser say that it may have?
He said at the November Metals Investor Forum that if the assumptions and his calculations doing a visualized outcome based on the current geological theory, it could potentially yield 20 billion ounces of gold over 100,000 square kilometers, keeping in mind Novo only have claim to about 7,000 of those square kilometers. And this, of course, is a theory they're hypothesizing.
If this is all true, what we have here is something that's preserved, that's nowhere else preserved in the world. In the Wits, the nearshore portion is missing. It's gone. Here, it seems to be largely preserved. And this is now coming to light, which is why this idea, there's not like a billion ounces here, but maybe 20 billion ounces to be harvested over a huge area of like 100,000 square kilometers that is basically staked wall to wall right now. Novo only has 10% of it. Iron companies own a huge chunk. All of a sudden, there's something potentially there that's everywhere, and all it will take is capital to prove it's there, and then mine it. And when that starts to happen, we'll have an extraordinary bull market for the resource sector.
I just think it's irresponsible for someone to put their name on an estimate like that. I mean, at this point, they haven't proved a resource, period. So, I mean, it's everything here. Because I've looked at this, you know, for my subscribers, and I've spoken to some respected people in the mining industry who have developed junior mining companies. And one of the guys, and he's just referring to the market cap at this point. He's not referring to, you know, what may or may not be there. But, you know, I asked him about Novo and the market cap versus what they've proved up. And he said, well, he goes, there's a saying in our business, there's wholesale, retail, and fairy tale. And we're at the fairy tale stage. And, you know, 20 billion ounces, that's a fairy tale. I mean, that's absurd. I mean, what's considered to be, a world-class deposit right now is under 10 million ounces, and there's maybe a couple 30 to 40 million ounce deposits left in the world. Seabridge Gold is sitting on 40 million of reserve ounces, and they can't find someone to come in and put up the $5.5 billion to get the mine in place. So to take the leap of faith between some pumpkin seed size gold nuggets, coarse nuggets, and 20 billion ounces is, I mean, that's, I have to put a fairy tale label on that. So, and again, I want to preface this, my comments, by saying there may well be something very substantial there. But on the other hand, you know, if you don't own it, are you going to buy into it at a $1.3 billion market cap when they haven't proved a mineralization system yet? So my fund's invested in a company, Eurasian Minerals, and they have a property in Australia called Kooninberry. And when I first met Eurasian Minerals, they brought nuggets, coarse grain nuggets from this property, and they have a big land package there. And they had, you know, lots of pictures of these coarse nuggets, small, like the ones that Novo has. And eventually, because they're kind of a project generator, they go on, they buy up claims to land, and then they do some initial work and then try to find a joint venture partner. And it took them a long time to find a joint venture partner. And, I'm talking about, this was in 2008 when I first met them. So that just gives you an idea at how long it can actually take for something to even begin to be developed. And so, I mean, Kooninberry is not even, they haven't even begun to develop it. So, and again, there may well be something on Novo, but I think it's crazy to pay a $1.3 billion market cap for something like this. And, you know, they released those initial, and what they're calling drilling is really trenching. And they released some drill holes, I don't know, a few weeks ago. And there was no visible gold. And I think that was kind of expected. So now they're going back and they're using, I forget the name of the type of drill they're using. And it creates a wide hole. And
it's like 17 inches wide, I believe.
Yeah. And so that may or may not yield something. But as it turns out, because I did some research on coarse gold formations, and the fact that they have coarse, that they're sitting on top of coarse gold, that actually can make it harder to find a mineralization system if it even exists. So, to just give you an example, one of the guys I spoke to who's a geologist, he said these nugget deposits are very difficult to model and they drive mining engineers absolutely nuts. And then he gave the example. This is what happened with Pretium's first shot at the published resource at the Brucejack project. So, and that would be sort of, I mean, it's not really a comparable, but I mean, it's an example of these coarse nugget deposits, if there's even a deposit there. So, That's kind of my thinking on Novo. And when you watch it trade, I mean, to me, it reminds me of the dot-com stocks in the late 1990s. You know, one out of 10,000 actually turned into something. And if you watch the stock, I mean, it trades with just incredible volatility. And to me, it's the fact that it ran up from a minimal market cap to $1.3 billion so quickly is just, to me, that's evidence of all the liquidity sloshing around. And I don't want to call Novo a bubble because, again, there may well, very well may be something there. But even if there is something there, it's going to take years and years to develop it. So, I mean, if people think that they're going to buy it at, I think I saw it today at $5.50 U.S. on the five letter symbol. You know, if you think you're going to buy it and all of a sudden it's going to turn into a $20 stock, well, that's not going to happen anytime soon. To give you an example, just to reference back to Seabridge, I mean, Seabridge has 40 million ounces of reserve gold resource. That means they're, you know, just to throw a number on it, 90% confident that they'll be able to mine it and get recovery of 40 million ounces of gold once they eventually get the mine in there. And their market cap, again, I'm speaking just from memory, I think their market cap right now is around $600 million. And this is a company that spent, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars to develop this project. And they've got something that's essentially shovel ready, but it's got a high upfront cost. And that's kind of the holdup right now. When the price of gold moves higher, someone's going to go in there and jump on that project because, you know, a large mining company who can shoulder the burden of the upfront construction costs. But so it's got a $637 million market cap right now. I mean, if you're a logical mining stock investor, do you want to buy into Seabridge at $637 million with a proved resource of 40 million ounces? Or are you going to buy into Novo? You know, you're buying into pure faith. So that's my thoughts on Novo. And, you know, again, if it were to sell off, you know, down to maybe $2 a share, I'd probably take a serious look at maybe buying some. But not at this market cap level. No way.
Dave, what are your thoughts about investing in any pre-revenue company, not just within the mining sector, pre-revenue company with such a large market cap, $1 billion market cap? What would cause you to see, what would you want to see in a pre-revenue company with $1 billion market cap that would cause you to invest?
I mean, I'd have to see a proven product and a market for that proven product. I mean, we know there's a proven market for gold. But they don't have a proven product that they can sell into that market. Again, it's you're talking about when you have a pre-revenue junior mining stock, it's essentially a venture capital company. And you got to invest in it that way. And you don't buy into a venture capital company at, you know, full expected value or even half of the expected value or even a third of the expected value. You want to buy into a pre-revenue venture capital company at maybe a 20th or a 50th of your expected value. So, and I mean, even if you wanted to say, okay, they've got 5 million ounces here, you know, again, the expected value there might be a couple billion at today's gold price. And again, I'm just throwing these numbers out kind of loosely, but I'm just thinking about other companies that have, you know, say a three to five million ounce gold mine. And so that would mean that I would want to buy into this at well under $100 million. I wouldn't want to buy into it at $1.3 billion. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got several stocks that I cover in my mining stock journal that actually have done drilling and they've got mineralization and they've got some of them even have 43-101 resource. And they're trading for under $50 million. In my latest mining stock journal, I've got a company that the market cap is, it's about $20 million. And they're sitting on land in a very prolific gold mining district in Nevada. You know, and it's, you know, I'm thinking, you know, on the low side, there's potential here for 1 to 2 million ounces. Well, 1 to 2 million ounce mining company that produces a couple hundred thousand ounces a year is going to get a market cap of 300 to 400 million. Buying into this one at 20 million. And that's the type of investments that I look for when I'm looking at junior mining stocks.
When you look at the tax loss selling season, which seems to be upon us and coming upon us, what are the opportunities and what strategies do you employ both as a fund manager for junior mining stocks and also the broader equities?
Yeah, I have to be honest with you on the tax loss selling issue. I don't think that generating tax losses is a reason in and of itself to sell a stock. If you want to sell a stock and you've got a loss in it, you know, don't wait until tax season to sell it. I mean, you can sell it whenever you want, and you're still going to get the benefit of the loss. You know, I know that I think that when markets were operating a lot more efficiently, I think there was maybe a small tax loss selling season effect in small caps. based on studies that I saw when I was in business school. But I'm not even really sure that, you know, it's a big issue anymore, especially now if there's so much liquidity sloshing around the system that I'm not sure the tax loss effect. Again, I haven't really investigated it because it's not something that interests me as an investor. So the way that I look at an investment is I don't care what time of year or what my tax position is. If something makes sense to put my money to work in it, I'm going to put my money to work. And I don't care if it's December or June.
So you don't maybe put out some stink bids and some stocks that junior mining stocks that you would like, you know, if there has to be some guy that needs to unload his position at, or wants to unload his position at the end of the year, you might be able to pick up a nice entry point.
I think you put in stink bids any time of the year and hopefully in hope to get hit. I think that strategy probably only works in stocks where there's not a lot of trading liquidity and you might get someone who has to dump, you know, say 50,000 shares and he's going to drive down the price of it because the liquidity is not there. But I think that's, to me, I think you're spending a lot more time than is worth it, you know, to pick up, you know, tag positions as something that someone pukes out because they want to get it out of their portfolio before the end of the year and take the tax loss. I mean, if you're sitting on something and you're waiting until the last 2 weeks of December to sell it and it's in a loss position, you know, that means you've got dead money sitting there that you might have been able to sell the stock at the same level 3 months earlier, and you could have used that money to put it into something that might have, you know, that might have been a more productive use of your capital. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
I'm not a big advocate of playing tax games, you know, with your assets, unless you're a billionaire, then it probably makes sense. I think it's kind of more of a registered investment advisors game that they play to generate trading commissions and things like that.
Dave, you follow closely the gold market and the futures market. You monitor the commitment of traders reports and the open interest. When you analyze that right now, where do you see the trajectory for gold going into the end of the year and the beginning of 2018?
That's a great question, because I got to tell you, there's something... There's some interesting cross currents going on in the precious metals market right now. I mean, I'm going to talk about it in terms of gold, but it also applies to silver. It's just easier just to refer to gold. But when I look at the commitment of traders report, when I see the open interest over 500,000 contracts, which is where it is now, and when I see the net short position of the banks, which fall under the commercial category in the COT report, and when I see their net short position at an extreme level, and I see the hedge fund net long position at an extreme level, historically that's been the signal that they're going to take the price of gold down. Well, they have taken the price of gold down from 1350, and I think it might have gotten down to, I don't know, 1270, 1260 recently, and it's since rebounded. But what's interesting is that it's been kind of drifting higher in an upward trading channel, and the open interest hasn't been coming down, and the net short position of the banks hasn't really changed much. And the same thing, you know, on the other side of the trade with the hedge funds, the net long position of the hedge funds hasn't really been reduced that much in the process of taking the price of gold down from 1350 down to, you know, 1270, 1260. I think the last I looked at it today, it was where, around 1295 or something like that. But anyway, my point here is that, you know, and I watch it trade pretty closely all day long every day. You know, we're at 1293 on the futures. It seems like, you know, because what they try to do is they'll throw a lot of paper into the market and they'll try and trigger the stop losses that the hedge funds have set up. And it's just an automatic process where they dump a bunch of paper into the market where they know the stop losses are. The hedge fund black box computers puke out the long positions, drives the price down. The banks cover their short, you know, and it's a wash, rinse, repeat thing. But since since gold came down to under 1300, they've had a hard time pushing it lower, trying to trigger, you know, the last level of stop losses that'll get the hedge funds to puke out their long position. And we saw that, I think it was maybe earlier this week or late last week, where there was the equivalent of 4 million ounces of paper gold dumped into the market, and it spiked down gold, and then gold kind of came right back to where it was. I think maybe by the end of the next day, it was right back to where it was. And the reason why I say there's some interesting cross currents going on is I think that the people who manipulate, the entities that manipulate gold using the paper markets, I think they've underestimated the amount of physical demand that's coming from the Eastern Hemisphere right now. China had been kind of quiet for a while, and in the last couple of weeks, they've picked up in a major way in terms of the amount of gold that is moving into China. India, I think, was underestimated, and the Indian gold demand, despite the propaganda articles that slam India's demand that we've seen from Bloomberg in the last couple of weeks, those are absolutely wrong, because I see the data for India every single day. And based on the premiums being paid for gold, imported gold in India right now, India's been importing a lot of gold for the last 6 to 8 weeks. And then another wild card that emerged this year was Turkey. Turkey's going to import a record amount of gold for that country this year. It's going to be well over, they're already year to date over 300 tons. And it's,
is that
it's
their up, central bank, or is that jewelry demand? Where's the demand coming from?
I think it's everything. I mean, Erdogan came out early in the summer, I think it was, and told his people, he said, told his population, buy gold. And we've seen Turkey's starting to pull out of NATO and pivot toward the Eastern Hemisphere geopolitical and economic bloc that's been formed by Russia and China. And so I think it's part of that. I think it's part of that to kind of put gold in, consolidate a gold position in their central bank and make sure the population there has gold. I mean, that's what China's doing right now. So I think the bottom line here is I think there's been a stronger demand for physical gold, gold that can be physically delivered, than the Western manipulators were anticipating. And that also kind of correlates with the fact that the BIS is now sitting on a record level of gold swaps. Gold, the way the gold swaps function is, it's essentially a de facto gold leasing operation where the BIS will swap gold for cash from the member central banks. The member central banks take that gold and they swap it or lease it out to the bullion banks, who then sell it in London for delivery versus the paper contracts that they're short over there, the forward contracts. And so to me, the fact that the BIS is at a record level of these gold swaps tells us that they're working overtime to try and keep gold flowing into the physical buyers in the Eastern Hemisphere, and also try to keep a lid as much as possible on the price. So I think it's kind of an interesting setup that we've got in the market right now. Now, there have been a couple times in the last 15 years when the open interest on the COMEX has been at a high level and the net short position of the banks has been at a high level, and they haven't been able to get the price of gold down before it started to take off again. And you know, if it starts to take off again here, you're going to see the banks covering their shorts, and that's going to have the effect of pushing the market even higher. So we still kind of, in my fund, we still put hedges on. We actually pulled our hedge off today, and we'll decide whether or not we're going to re-implement a hedge on our mining stock position early next week. But gold is behaving as if it wants to go a lot higher.
If you had us say what your thoughts were regarding next year, could you see a 20% breakout where gold goes above 1,500? Do you think that's within the realm of possibility based on what you're observing right now?
I think 1,400 is very doable. 1,500, I don't know. I don't really like to put price forecasts on the price of gold anymore, other than to just try and gauge where I think the general direction is going to be next, because there's so much manipulation there. I mean, at the end of the day, I guess if these guys wanted to, they could just print up, you know, double the amount of contracts they've already printed up and dump them into the market, and that's going to push the price of gold down. It would only be temporary, but it would cause a lot of psychological damage to the market for a while. Let's just say, I wouldn't be surprised if we have this same conversation this time next year and gold is $150 to $200 higher. So, yeah, I guess in that sense, it would be pushing $1,500 by the end of next year. I think it's within the realm of possibilities. I wouldn't necessarily bet on it per se.
When you look at the junior gold mining sector over the 6 months, where do you see the best opportunities, and what, generally speaking, what are you presenting to your readership with the Mining Stock Journal?
You know, again, my Mining Stock Journal focuses on the junior mining stocks, and I do have a couple of names that I recommend that are, you know, pre-drilling or preliminary drilling. They don't necessarily have a defined resource yet. And those are what I call the real venture capital plays. But I think that the best opportunity in the sector, if you believe in the sector and you think the price of gold and silver is going a lot higher, the best opportunities are going to be in the junior mining companies that have approved resource, and that resource has economic metallurgy, because the senior large cap producing mining companies, the Newmonts and the Goldcorps and the Barricks, they're depleting their resource base faster than they're replacing it, and so the where they're going to have to turn to readily replace their resource base is to buy these juniors who have approved resource. So, you know, I think any quality junior mining company in that category is really cheap right now. I mean, they were the cheapest they've ever been in the history of the sector in mid-December 2015. And then we had that big run-up into 2016. And I think the sector probably got a little ahead of itself, and we've had a what I would call a healthy pullback, even though, you know, a lot of it was a result of the manipulation of the sector. But I think the juniors are for sure at the cheaper range of their historical range. And so I think now's a good time to start putting money to work selectively in the juniors. And one of the things I've started to do also, there's companies that are emerging producers or have been producing for a while. A good example is Endeavor Silver.
Yep.
And they have, you know, silver mines down in Mexico. And those stocks like that got beat up a lot recently. And I call those more like trading stocks.
Because there's high volume.
Well, and also they've got a high beta to the sector. So, you know, Endeavor Silver got beat up relative to larger cap producers over the last 6 months. And so I've been featuring some of those trading ideas in there. And I don't say day trade. They're not day trade ideas. I'm talking about, like, we'll say gold. Let's look at Gold Standard Ventures, for example. I mean, it got down to $1.30 sometime in the last couple of weeks. And we have a core position in our fund, and I added some at $1.30, and I'll probably wait. And if the price of gold moves higher, like I think it will, the stock will probably be pushing $2 in the next 3 or 4 months. And I'll sell out what I bought at $1.30. So it's smaller producing or close to producing stock. Now, Gold Standard Ventures isn't close to producing yet, but they're sitting on a ton of gold. So I lump it in that category, even though they're not a producer. McEwen Mining is another one that I think I put it in my mining stock journal as a buy at around the $2 level, and it's dipped below $2, and we stuck it in our fund around $2, and I actually meant to buy some when it was trading in the $1.90 range, and I got distracted and didn't. But that would be another one, and they've got a really interesting development project up in Canada, and when you look at how Rob McEwen has put it together, it's really kind of brilliant the way he pieced these two properties together. And they're probably, you know, again, I'm talking from the top of my head here because I don't remember the exact time frame, but they're probably, I don't know, 18 to 24 months away from actually producing gold up there. So
yeah, that'll see the stock rising.
Yeah, and I think just, you know, because of its beta to the sector, and the same thing with Seabridge, because of their beta to the sector, if we get a nice move in gold here in the next couple of months, those stocks are going to way outperform the GDX index or the Huey index or whatever index you want to use to measure producing mining companies.
Have you looked at Klondike's mines at all?
I haven't. And, you know, there's a lot of ideas out there that are good ideas, but they're what I call, you know, newsletter darlings, or they already have a lot of eyeballs looking at them. And so for me to look at it and recommend it as an undervalued idea, I don't have any value added there because there's already so many people looking at it, so many investors who trade it or invest in it, that I think that a lot of, I guess what you would call the alpha in the stock has been priced out of it, and it's gonna trade in line with the sector, maybe with a slightly higher beta than the sector. What I'm looking for is ideas where I can learn the story and get to know management and say, hey, this is a 5 to 10 bagger here. I mean, yeah, you know, you're risking your capital, but your upside is 5 to 10 times. And so that's kind of the ideas that I focus on.
Dave's website is investmentresearchdynamics.com, and if you'd like to subscribe to his mining stock journal, you can find information there. It's a very affordable way to learn more about mining stock investing, and as you've heard here, Dave Off also lets you in on what he's investing in his fund and gives you many investing ideas and why he thinks they're a good buy. So Dave, I appreciate you joining me again for this discussion.
Bill, thanks again for having me, and if any of your listeners would like to get a sample copy of my newsletter, go ahead and put my email address when you post the video, and I'd be happy to send a sample copy.
Will do. Thanks again, Dave.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.